Okay, I'm going to start now. Okay, so I'm no Ron Page. I can't dunk, so. Actually, something yesterday when I was driving home, my dad knows what I'm going to say. You remember when you said your coach or whatever asked you if you were happy? And I said, how could he not? He could dunk. But anyways. Oh. Okay. All right, so I am, you know, like when you plan to speak on something, and there's other speakers, you don't usually expect it to kind of tie in so well, because there's a lot of things that you can do to live a freer, fuller life. But this ties in really, really well. I didn't use the term big leaves, but I wish I would have. So I'm going to start with, can I use that chart over there? Okay. Okay. So last time I spoke at the Winter Run, I was trying to draw a whale, and it looked like an upside-down duck. So give me a little break. I'm not the best drawer. Oh, there's something else in there. There we go. Okay. Just going to kind of draw what it looks like. I told you I'm not the best drawer. This is supposed to be the same as this side, but anyways. Okay, so this is the basic shape. Does anybody know what a Van de Graaff generator is? I didn't even know the name of it until I looked for a picture. Sort of. Okay, a Van de Graaff generator, you plug it in and it generates static electricity up here. Anyways. So we have this thing. Last year in my physics class, we would have a lot of spare time because everything was really easy for some reason. And she would always bring in this Van de Graaff generator, and we would have this sort of like test of manhood. Yeah, we were real stupid. We kind of still are, but Timmy wasn't in that class, so no offense. But anyways, and our test of manhood was... Well, this thing can shock you pretty crazy. It's actually probably this big. But anyways, if you come within, like, I don't know, maybe this far, you get a nasty shock. Nasty shock. And our test of manhood sort of thing is, this will kind of have a Christian thing at the end. But just in case you're wondering. Sort of. So, and our test of manhood, I guess you could say, was... you have to kind of end up like this somehow. Because on your way there, you get zapped like a bajillion times. And but once you're there, you're a man. You know, like, in Africa, you gotta kill a lion, but for us, you just gotta touch the static ball. But anyways, so... You, there's kind of two things that are going on in your head when you're thinking about this test of manhood. It's I can blend in with my friends, or I can preserve my not pain.
My well-being.
Sure. Okay. So it's kind of a battle, right? You reach, and maybe the first time you do it, you pull back after the first couple of shocks, and you think about it. You're like, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Like. My friends will still be friends, right? And then you think, well, no, they'll never be my friend again if I don't touch the ball, right? But anyways, so me, I ended up touching it once. Only once. Because, well, I'm a man now. But
sort of.
Yeah. So I guess you could say my focus is going to be... on manhood. You're not a man until you touch the static ball. It's the kind of parallel to Christianity. I'll step over these cords. Is I guess this whole area that will give me a second. This whole area that'll shock you. I like diagrams too. This whole area that'll shock you is like. No. it's like the thoughts of self-preservation, right? As soon as you get into that range, you're thinking, well, I can come back out and not have pain, or I could like reach my full potential with my friends. But the Christian parallel is that I ended up peeling some skin off right there. This is a dangerous lesson. Don't try this at home. Is that when you try to do things for God a lot of the time, you're gonna, before you accomplish, I guess you could say, like this, I can't stand this thing. Yeah, and it fell down. So this would be, there. That's your maximum potential with God, okay? Like 100%, not really, because you can never, anyways. And out here is sort of self-preservation, where you think you're not going to feel any pain. And this is sort of fear, sort of, where you're thinking, I could either reach my maximum potential with God, or I can pull out and preserve myself, I guess I'll say. Anyways, I have a story to tell you guys. No, not the Van de Graaff anymore. So, over the past, I guess in September, really. I really felt a calling from God to go to my school, and well, you have to go to school, but to tell people about God. And you don't just go and say, like, I'm going to tell you about Jesus today, because then they look at you like, what about yesterday? But you kind of have to strategize how you're going in. Like, you don't just go in. You just kind of bring up the topic here and there, or be a really nice person and hope they see something, I guess. But, so anyways, I started getting into talks with people, and it was going really good. I could tell they were sort of curious about God and thinking about coming to youth group and stuff. These were teenagers, obviously, from school. And so one time, there was a basketball practice, because I'm on the basketball team, if you couldn't tell. I can't dunk, but I'm working on it. And anyways, I couldn't go because I had to work. It was like 5 to 8:30, so there was like half an hour window where I could have gone to practice, but there was really no point. And then after work, so 8:30, I got a text message from a friend, to one of these people I've been talking to all the time, to go to Tim Hortons. And I went. And there were, I guess, 4 girls, which is kind of an awkward situation, but it was all good. And then when I went home, I found one of the people who was at Tim Hortons posted that they were at Tim Hortons. And you know how you can like tag people in there? You can say like, I was with such and such. Well, they put my name there. And I guess one of the guys on the team found out. And he posted on our team page something incredibly inappropriate that I won't repeat. But basically wondering why I was hanging out with girls instead of going to practice, right? But the thing that hit me really hard was the way he really didn't show any respect for girls. And like, I was trying to do things for God, and here's these guys just, they're joking, and in their head they're not doing anything wrong, but to me it's like, you're the biggest jerk ever. But anyways, and one of my friends added a comment, and it really shocked me. He said, like, at least tell us which girl you went for to Tim Hortons. And I was just like, okay, why are you doing that? Like, I'm disappointed. And this guy was a Christian. So part of me was like, I'm trying to do things for God, and here I have friends that are Christians even opposing me. So I didn't tell anybody about it, and I decided I would go to bed and hope that it would kind of tone down that whole sort of, not shame, but just kind of that numbness that we talked about earlier, just kind of hiding, I guess. And when I woke up in the morning, my whole idea was wrong, because I was still really mad and thinking about it, and I actually got physically sick. Like, I thought about it so much, like the Christian friend of mine and stuff, sorta. And I actually didn't go to school. I was sick, and I was just shocked and all those feelings. And during the day, because I was sick at home, I had a lot of time to think. And I'm a real thinker, I guess. I don't talk too much. Don't comment, Tim. I don't talk too much, but I like to think. I guess everybody does, but you know what I mean. And a thought came to my head, and this is what I wrote down. What if this is the devil counterattacking me because I'm trying to get God into my school? Just think about that for a second. Let it sink in. So I decided I would act on this. I didn't want to really talk to the non-Christian guys because they didn't, like, even though they knew they were being disrespectful and stuff, they just thought they were making a joke and stuff. But I knew I could talk to the Christian. Because, well, you just don't act like that, I guess. So we got into talking and stuff, and basically we just opened up to each other about how I felt, and he told me that, well, he'd really felt he'd let his guard down with trying to fit in high school because he had just gotten into grade 9. This was his first year. And ever since then, we'd actually gotten really close. Well, not really close. We're not like BFFs, but we're like good friends. Good friends. Okay. And we, in sort of an informal way, but we've actually, I don't know how to word it, we've gotten friends, those friends that I was talking about, to come to church and come to youth group. So that's an amen for me. And so far, there's three people. Wow. So far, there's three people who have come to youth group from the people that we talked to. Two who have gone to church, one regularly, and one who is thinking about coming to church. So, you know, I'm thankful for that, obviously. And so I decided, well, you can't talk you can't talk about God unless you connected to the Bible, right? So I was looking for a character who sort of wanted to do things for God, or at least be a nice guy. And every time he tries to do something good or does the right thing, he just gets bashed for it. And the first thing that came to my head was Joseph. Everybody know Joseph? So I am going to read some from the Bible. Yeah, right here. Technical difficulties. What? Okay, so this is the beginning of the story. I'm not sure how far this goes, but okay. So Jacob, Joseph's father, was living in the land where his father made a place for himself, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, a boy 17 years old, was looking after the flock together with his brothers, his father's wives, and Joseph gave their father a bad account of them. Now the love which Israel, or Jacob, had for Joseph was greater than his love for all his other children, because he got him when he was an old man. And he had a long coat made for him, the coat of many colors, if you've ever heard of that. But anyways, so the dad's favoring the youngest son, Joseph. And Joseph, really, we don't know, but it's safe to assume, I guess, well, I do, that he hasn't done anything, like, super bad, obviously, because if his dad favors him. Anyways. And Joseph had sort of a cool gift from God. Does anybody know what it is? A little louder. Yeah, he could interpret dreams. Or, well, I guess God gave him messages in dreams and other people, and he could interpret them. And one day he said to them, "Let me give you the story of my dream. We were all in the field getting the grain stems together, and my grain kept upright, and yours," he's talking to his family, "came around mine and went down on the earth before mine." And his brother said to him, "Are you to be our king? Will you have authority over us?" And because of his dream and his words, their hate for him became greater than ever. So they already didn't like him because their father favored him over the rest of them. But now it's 10 times worse because, well, for an example, Isaac, if I told you that I had a dream where you were bowing down to me, would you want to be my best friend?
Yes. You would have
you know what I mean, though? You wouldn't like it. You'd be like, wow, this guy's full of himself. You know? But anyways, so their hatred grew for him. Then he had another dream. You know, if it was me, I'd probably be like, "Nick, just stop there. They already hate your guts." But anyways. Then he had another dream and gave his brothers an account of it, saying, "I have had another dream. The sun and the moon and 11 stars gave honor to me." And he gave word of it to his father and his brothers. But his father, protesting, said, "What sort of a dream is this? Am I and your mother and your brothers to go down on our faces to the earth before you?" Or bow down to you, basically. And his brothers were full of envy, but his father kept his words in mind. Now his brothers went to keep watch over their flocks, father's flock in Shechem. And Jacob said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers with the flock in Shechem?" Now, there's a lot of words in the Bible that I don't really know how to pronounce, so forgive me if I said it wrong. And he said to him, "Go now and see if your brothers are well and how the flock is, and then come back and give me word." So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a man saw him wandering in the country, and said to him, "What are you looking for?" And he said, "I am looking for my brothers. Please give me word of where they are keeping their flock." And the man said, "They have gone away from here, for they said in my hearing, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after them and came up with them at Dothan. But they saw him there when he was a long way off, and before he came near them, they made a secret design against him to put him to death. So obviously those dreams didn't do any good, right? But Joseph was just telling them, you know, I don't think he knew right away what was up. So he's kind of oblivious, and they want to kill him, so they're not too happy. So saying one to another, "See, here comes this dreamer. Let us now put him to death and put his body in one of these holes, and we will say, 'An evil beast has put him to death,' and we will see what becomes of his dreams." But Reuben, hearing these words, one of the brothers, got him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life. Do not put him to a violent death, but let him be placed in one of these holes, this to keep him safe from their hands, with the purpose of taking him back to his father again." Now when Joseph came to his brothers, they took off his long coat which he had on, and they put him in the hole. Now the hole had no water in it. Then seating themselves, they took their meal. Let's see here. Saw a traveling band of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead on their way to Egypt with spices and perfumes on their camels. And Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there in putting our brother to death and covering up his blood? Let us give him to these Ishmaelites for a price, and let us not put violent hands on him. For he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brothers gave ear to him. Thank God he had a brother like that. Anyways, so to sum up the next part, because I don't know how much time I have, they sell him into slavery, and he becomes a servant for an Egyptian guy named Potiphar, a captain of high position in Pharaoh's house. So he was a really good servant, right? Wait a second. I think I pressed the wrong button. Okay. Now Joseph was taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar the Egyptian, a captain of high position in Pharaoh's house, got him for a price from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he did well, and he was living in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw the Lord was with him, making everything he did go well. Boy, would I would like that. I would like everything to go well for me. Even he's a servant, but still, you know. Things couldn't have been better, I guess, in the situation he was in. And having a high opinion of Joseph as his servant, he made him the overseer of his house and gave him control over all he had. And from the time when he made him overseer and gave control of all his property, the blessing of the Lord was with the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on all he had in the house and in the field. But something happens. Now Joseph was very beautiful in form and face, so he's a pretty boy. And, after a time, his master's wife, so Potiphar's wife, looking on Joseph with desire, because he's a pretty boy, said to him, "Be my lover, or sleep with me." But he would not, and said to her, "You see that my master keeps no account of what I do in his house, and has put all his property in my control, so that no one has more authority in this house than I have. He has kept nothing back from me, except for you, because you are his wife. How then may I do this great wrong, sinning against God?" It'd be awesome if Adam was like that, eh? Anyways, so, and day after day she went on requesting Joseph to come to her and be her lover, but he would not give ear to her. Now one day, he went into the house to do his work, and not one of the men in the house was inside. And pulling at his coat, she said, "Come to my bed." But slipping out of his coat, he went running away. And when she saw that he had got away, letting her keep his coat, she went for the men of her house and said to them, "See, he has let a Hebrew come here and make sport of us. He came to my bed, and I gave a loud cry, and hearing it, he went running out without his coat." So, things were working real well for Joseph, but, and he was trying to do the right thing. Like, you could tell, day after day, with that temptation, he must have been strong in God. And he just said no every time. And then one time she gets an opportunity to say, well, he's the one doing the wrong thing. And, well, I'm pretty sure if you had a wife, I don't think many people in here have a wife, you'd listen to your wife before you'd listen to some Hebrew dude, right? Yeah. Just checking, because that's important. And Joseph's master took him and put him in prison in the place where the king's prisoners were kept in chains, and he was there in the prison house. But the Lord was with Joseph and was good to him, and made him the keeper of the prison, and made the keeper of the prison his friend. So it's like God's letting him kind of get beat up, but he takes care of him. But anyways, and he's blessing Joseph. And the keeper of the prison put all the prisoners under Joseph's control, and he was responsible for whatever was done there. And the keeper of the prison gave no attention to anything which was under his care, because the Lord was with him, and the Lord made everything he did go well. So even in prison, everything's working out for Joseph. Now, after these things, the chief servant who had the care of the wine and the chief bread maker in Pharaoh's house did something against Pharaoh's orders. So Pharaoh put them both in prison. And I'm going to sum this part up again, too, because, well, it's pretty long. Anyways, and they both have a dream, but the one I'm going to focus on is the carer of the wine. And he gave him account of his dream and said, "In my dream I saw a vine before me, and on the vine were three branches, and it seemed as if I put out buds and flowers, and from them came grapes ready for cutting. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and crushing them into Pharaoh's cup, gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand." Then Joseph said, "This is the sense of your dreams. Three branches are 3 days. After 3 days, Pharaoh will give you honor and put you back into your place, and you will give him his cup as you did before, where you were his wine servant." Man, is that a cool gift. I wish I could do that. Anyways. So after 3 days, oh, and he also says, emphasis on this right here, but keep in mind when things go well for you and be good to me and say a good word for me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. So obviously he's not having a good time in there. Prison, not the funnest place. But after 3 days, whoops, sorry, keep in mind the things I did for you. So put a good word in for Pharaoh. Anyways, long story short, Pharaoh had a dream. Wait for it. But the wine servant did not keep Joseph in mind or give a thought to him. Now after 2 years had gone by, 2 more years in prison, like the dude forgot to put a good word in. Pharaoh had a dream, and in his dream he was by the side of the Nile, and out of the Nile came 7 cows, good-looking and fat, and their food was the river grass. That's some nice grass right there. And after them, 7 other cows came out of the Nile, poor-looking and thin, and they were by the side of the other cows. And the 7 thin cows made a meal of the 7 fat cows. Then Pharaoh came out of his sleep. Yeah, I'm not going to try and draw it because it's going to look like an upside-down duck no matter what I do. Then Pharaoh came out of his sleep. But he went to sleep again and had a second dream in which he saw 7 heads of grain full and good and all in one stem. And after them came up 7 other heads, thin and wasted by the east wind. And the 7 thin heads made a meal of the good heads. And when Pharaoh was awake, he saw it was a dream. And in the morning his spirit was troubled. Well, I think I'd be troubled after a dream like that too. Dump some nice cows. And he sent for all the wise men of Egypt and the holy men and put his dream before them, but no one was able to give him the sense of it. Then the chief wine servant said to Pharaoh, "The memory of my sin comes back to me now." Pharaoh had been angry with his servants and had put me in prison in the house of the captain of the army, together with the chief bread maker. And we had a dream on the same night, 2 of us, and the dreams had a special sense. And there was with us a young Hebrew, the captain's servant, and when we put our dreams before him, he gave us the sense of them. Then Pharaoh sent for Joseph. I'm skipping a little bit, but yeah. And they took him quickly out of prison. And when his hair had been cut and his dress changed, because he don't want to look like he's in prison when he's with the Pharaoh, he came before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have had a dream, and no one is able to give me the sense of it. Now it has came to my ears that you are able to give me sense of a dream when it is put before you." Then Joseph said, "Without God there will be no answer of peace for Pharaoh." Man, he gives credit to God again. What a nice guy. Wait for it. Then Pharaoh said, "In my dream," and he repeats the dream. Both of them. Then Joseph said, "These 2 dreams have the same sense. God has made clear to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 fat cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads of grain are 7 years. The 2 have the same sense. The 7 thin and poor-looking cows who came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 heads of grain, dry and wasted by the east wind, are 7 years when there will be no food." 7 years without food is a long time. I don't think I could go a day without food. As I said to Pharaoh before, God has made clear to him what he's about to do. 7 years are coming in which there will be great wealth of grain in Egypt. And after that will come 7 years when there will not be enough food. And the memory of the good years will come from men's minds, and the land will be made waste by the bad years. So imagine 7 awesome years, and it would make those other 7 years, or how long you live during the famine, really miserable, wouldn't it? It's like, we had 7 years, and it was awesome. Just kind of make things worse. But anyways, "And men will have no memory of the good time because of the need which will come after, for it will be very bitter. And this dream came to Pharaoh 2 times because this thing is certain, faux show. And God will quickly make it come about. And now let Pharaoh make search for a man of wisdom and good sense, and put him in authority over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him put overseers over the land of Egypt to put in store a 1/5 of the produce of the land in the good years." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, where am I? Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Seeing that God has made all this clear to you, there is no other man of such wisdom and good sense as you. You then are to be over my house, and and all my people will be ruled by your word. Only as king will I be greater than you. So, long story short, Joseph is second in Egypt. And Egypt was... What? Was, sort of. And so he was second in Egypt, which was crazy if you think about it, because Egypt was big cat at the time. They had a big cat. Anyways, back to the rest of this lesson. So, through God's gift to Joseph, dream interpretation, Joseph saved lots and lots of people from a seven-year famine. And I thought of the 30-hour famine, and I was thinking, you think 30 hours deserves pizza after? But that's just a thought. Anyways, this Pharaoh then had Joseph released and made him second in Egypt only to himself. Here's what I'm getting at. When you become a Christian, and you start... I guess, taking that idea of self-preservation away, meaning that you want to give things up for God, specifically giving up yourself to become more like God and to do great things for God, you need to expect opposition. Because I know for me, I thought it was going to be an easy fix. Because God's all-powerful, so how am I going to lose, right? And I went in, and that happened. And I was actually physically sick, which is crazy. It's never happened to me before. Devil isn't going to be happy when you try and do things for God, if it's not obvious. Kind of the garden and everything we talked about is a good example. And he'll do everything he can to manipulate you into focusing on preserving yourself and your status, rather than having yourself lowered and perhaps planting a seed or increasing the kingdom of heaven. So, I don't know if the internet went through. I think it did. Give me some time. My mom, of all people. Remember what I talked about before? When she gets off that phone, I'm dead. Anyways, sort of, yeah. I gotta finish my lesson first. Oh no, it's a video. No, nothing. Okay, so the video's not gonna work. But okay, but no, I can't act it out. Does anybody ever? Okay, I'm running short on time, so I gotta make this quick. Anybody ever heard of Louis Giglio? Okay, that was a straight answer. Yes, no. Anyways, so he was telling this story in one of his videos. And, what? And in one of his videos, they were going to go rafting down the Zambezi River, which is connected to Victoria Falls, which is like super crazy big waterfall. So, and this is at the bottom, so they're not going to fall off or anything. Anyways, So they're there, and they're expecting they're going to have a super fun time. You know, it's like if you go to the beach with your family, and you're thinking of having a really good time. And they're all rolling up their sleeves, getting ready for a tan, and splashing each other and joking around. And their instructor's doing paddle stuff, like paddle on the left, and we're all paddling, and paddle on the right, and they're all practicing paddling. And so they put their life jackets on, they're all ready, and they get into their raft. And just before they hit the first rapid, there's a bloated dead hippopotamus. And that was their last warning sign from God, not to go. Anyways, to the point of the story. So they could hear sort of like a in the background. And they hit the first rapid. Everybody flies out of the raft. I'm not good at kind of making people excited or feel emotions, if you can tell. But anyways, so they're all propelled out of the raft, and they get through the rapid. They all get back in the raft. And this is what he says. Let me tell you, there was none of this. There was none of this. We were all like, pedal on the left, pedal on the right. And now they're thinking, we got a whole day ahead like this. And so the thing was, they were unprepared. And they weren't really expecting any opposition, if you can see where I'm going with this. They were focused on themselves. And after their first upset, everything was focused on the journey ahead. In your Christian walk, there will hopefully be a time when you're called to do something for God. Because if there isn't, something's probably wrong. If you are prepared, you will not have this crazy upset. Well, I shouldn't say that, because the Bible does say, in this world you have suffering. So, just ignore that point, I guess. But if you cling to God, you'll be strong, like building your house on the rock. But if you're unprepared, times are going to be hard, feelings can end up hurt, and you can even end up questioning if God is really real. I don't know about anybody else, but it's happened to me. You see, once you are prepared, you focus less on the why me and preserving myself, and more on the full potential of God, and I'm going through this, and I'm going to do all I can for Him. And that's pretty much the lesson. But if you ever get a chance, if you ever get a chance to play with that Van de Graaff generator, it will make this illustration way more like. If you ever get a chance though, I suggest you do, because it's really fun.